This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Oh, the heavy metal theme of our podcast on heritageradionetwork.org. It's eating disorder. And all I heard was the meatballs. Are you ready for the summer? Memorial Day. We were off last week. I am Crazy Lace Conti. I'm joined by my host, the Reverend.
What's up? Reverend Spiro here.
Anything Memorial Day? Did you barbecue? You have a lot of feral cats outside your apartment. Did you barbecue any feral cats?
No. Oh. I fed the feral cats, which I'm not supposed to do because my co-op doesn't want me to do it, but I don't give a shit.
All right.
they're not listening to the show, you know. Okay. So.
Nor are the feral cats.
No, exactly.
So Memorial Day and then this past weekend, anything doing?
Nah, didn't do shit. Yesterday, I spent most of the day at Niagara. Jesse,
the bar, place with the waterfall.
No, the bar. Jesse from Degeneration.
Oh, sure,
alumni. He was on our show.
Yeah,
spent it there. It was fun with a friend from out of town.
Okay,
it was awesome. We got caught in that stupid rainstorm, and we ended up eating at that Brazilian place on 6th Street, which was really good.
Okay.
It's kind of a churrasqueiro place.
All right, very nice.
Yeah.
I had got caught in a rainstorm, but I was fortunate to be in a rainstorm in New Orleans.
Oh.
I was there for the Oyster Fest. Louisiana seafood, you know, start with the best ingredients. And Sonya the Black Widow Thomas won yet again. So
you were the champ at one point.
I was the 2002 champ, the first ever Oyster King, the master of the mollusk. And some would say I've been chasing that moment ever since. But the oysters were not as big as last year, just as creamy. So I did 21 dozen in 8 minutes.
Do you still have your signature fork?
I do have. Mine's in pewter, which you can get at CrazyLegsConti.com. It's custom made. But I should not waste any time on competitive eating because tonight's show is more really about, and I don't want to phrase it like competitive nerddom. It's really elevating an art that doesn't get enough credit, much like I feel about competitive eating being a real sport.
Right.
Our discussion point will be some comics, pop culture, food and pop culture. And we're joined by two experts in the field, but some would call them raconteurs. Bill Scurry, filmmaker, adventurer, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Nick, I don't want to blow the last name, but it's Parpura?
Purpura.
I did blow it,
close.
But you know.
Close.
And Nick is co-owner of JHU Comics. Here in two locations, in one in Staten Island.
The one in Staten Island.
And you guys moved to from 30...
Well, yeah, we're now on 32nd.
32nd.
Between Madison and Park in Manhattan.
So with full disclosure, in the last year and a half, I became a very big comic fan.
Which I never knew.
This is my coming out party.
Here's the thing. When we had a guest who was a... he was a chef who made food out of, you know, pot or whatever. Myself, I don't smoke. And our co-host, Chef Paul, who's not here, doesn't smoke. And we're like, oh, yeah, the guy with the dreadlocks and the beard, he smoked. And he's like, yeah, guys, I don't smoke.
You know? Yeah.
But that's one thing I didn't know about you. But now I didn't know you were a comic geek, too.
I spend all the time I would smoking pot reading comics. The reason I didn't want to let it out was not that I was embarrassed. It was because it was a learning curve. I was so new to it. I didn't even know at first that the comics come out on Wednesday. Like, I would just stop in a regular day, and I'd be like, is there anything new? And they're looking at me like, what are you doing? So, and I will say this, though. I think we can all agree that Manhattan and the New York area has some great comic book places.
Absolutely.
But, you know, and I live near St. Mark's Comics, which is a small place.
Absolutely. Very, great place.
Very good, kind people there helped me out. Because I only bought Swamp Thing. That was my big thing. I love Swamp Thing. And then there's Forbidden Planet, which has a lot of figurines.
Right.
In studio from the Cornmo show, we brought back Eli, the now 6-year-old, and he brought his comic book collection. So we
which
go
is
and.
Awesome.
But the best thing about JHU issue comics. Not necessarily the best thing. The thing that saved me and really educated me is you send out a weekly newsletter, which not only is the checklist, so idiots like me can keep track, because I did expand from Swamp Thing into a lot of different things, Saga, and then on the Marvel side, then Star Wars, Howard the Duck, Ant-Man, and so...
Well, it starts with a gateway comic. One comic hits you, and then, here I go. Yeah. Well,
there was, actually, you know what my gateway comic was? It was Fantastic Four, the first time the Salem Seven showed up. Like, I was a kid, I saw the cover, I was like, bang!
Oh, that was like Richie Buckler, right?
Yeah, that's a good absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Hell of a thing. You know what? As far as I'm concerned, there's the gateway comic that got more white heterosexual males into comics, and that's, you could say that's everybody.
Archie?
Larry Hamas.
G.I. Joe, absolutely.
I'm a little older than that.
Well, here's the thing. I was going to say, in the older crowd, too, Star Wars was my gateway. It was a gateway comic book that brought me. I saw the
Archie
movie.
Goodwin and Walt Simonson.
Those comic books brought me in.
And at JH, you can get the... They released the Marvel Omnibus Volume 1.
Absolutely, those comics
it's expensive,
are all back
but
in print.
The second volume, I think, comes out pretty soon, too.
And they just put out the first six issues, the adaptation, in an individual book. So
very nice.
One of the other ones that actually got me was that first... There was that great cover. It was the second... Second appearance of Man-Bat in a Batman comic where it's much more Bernie. I remember the artist, but it was much more horrific.
Yeah, I think that was it might have been Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah, not Neil. It was Bernie.
Neil created the character.
It was the second time he appeared, and I believe it was a 25-cent comic because that's within my age range,
right?
And that got me too. Your economic strata too.
Exactly. But that actually, till this day. But then I was like, that's pretty cool. But I can never embrace DC. I just couldn't. I was such a Marvel guy, man. Me too.
But you know, DC hit me. Until I was when I was about 15, it was they're the world's greatest superheroes. It's Batman, it's Superman, it's Wonder Woman.
But they're not the Teen Titans from the 80s. The Thing had issues. Spider-Man had issues.
Post 1985.
Ghost Rider had issues.
Post 1985, DC caught up.
All right.
Is it
a Yankees Red Sox thing, or is it do people divide, or is it just two? There's too much.
I think it's an Apple PC thing.
Fallacy, because the idea of the Marvel Zombie was something that went back to Stan and Jack and Jazzy John Romita and all that. But it's like, I mean,
that way.
It's like the idea that people weren't buying DC Comics is bullshit. Especially post Tim Burton. I mean, it's like,
I buy a lot of DC Comics. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
I mean, I do. It's not about not buying them. It's just about who I relate to better.
I relate to Marvel. But that's strictly superficial. I relate to Marvel more. I've read plenty. Warners have gotten plenty of my money over the years. No doubt. True. But for sure, I'm a Marvel guy. I interned there. That's where I wanted to work. Yeah. I shook Runewald's hand in the bathroom and all those things. It was a big deal.
Before I did my last job, I actually went to the Marvel offices to interview because they had an ad sales position open. And I'm in advertising or whatever. And when I interviewed, there was a huge, plastic Hulk figure and a huge plastic Doctor Doom figure in their conference room.
You used to go to the old DC offices before they moved.
And honestly, I was very intimidated.
But it's exciting because on the show we've had Mike Edison, who worked at all the Dirty Girly magazines.
Oh, Mike's great.
And there was
there
was never that level of enthusiasm when I was by the Playboy. This is exciting. So for me, the one I love, Alexander Jodorowsky.
Yeah.
So I came to some of the alternative comics through his stuff that never made it into Dune and the Inkle and then the Bourgeois they just printed, which I thought was just absolutely history and violence and sex. And then that led me in my newbie comic world to realize that besides DC and Marvel, there are other smaller producers out there.
Humanoids, the French publisher.
Big Man Plans, which is now I've blown.
Eddie Campbell.
I can't remember.
Eddie Campbell.
All right, thank you. Yeah. And obviously Saga is on. Is that
Image?
Vertigo?
Image.
Thank you. See, there you go.
Which was the big rock star in the '90s.
Yeah.
It's
Vertigo influenced it, but Image has essentially caught all the Vertigo drip pan.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
So as a co-owner of JHU, do you try to steer people Is it like a, being a sommelier in a wine shop? Are you trying to find out their interest and steer them?
Of course. Or are you supporting the little things? The idea is we're supporting what our customers want. You don't ever want to take away the guy who wants a regular Superman comic where Superman fights Lex Luthor and it's a regular old standard superhero comic. That being said, people can't read the same thing over and over forever. And your comics have to grow up with you. You can't read the same comics you read when you were 12, when you're 25.
Well, so you're saying I shouldn't revisit Cherry Pop-Tart that I used to sneak
Of course you should.
But this man, from 12 to 45, he fascination with cannibalism. We've talked about it. He turned me on to Crust.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God. Which is about... it's not zombies. They're not undead, but there's a disease that basically crosses people's faces. It's like this rash you get in a cross shape, and they're cannibal rapists.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, right.
And I bought one issue. It's Garth Ennis, who's amazing. Right. And then I bought every freaking other issue.
All right, so I'm gonna
because he understood me. We have a thing.
I was reading Comic Book News, which maybe isn't that cool, but that's the little insert that comes with everything. Yeah, right. And they were talking about, and see, this is why I shouldn't say anything, but there's a celebrity chef death show comic. It's got a blade, a knife. Help me out.
Hasn't
come out yet, right?
No, it hasn't. You know, the
but this is awesome.
One of the things that the American audiences are learning is what went on in Japanese manga for all these years.
Okay,
manga is so popular in Japan because there's something for everybody, and the American comic market is realizing that there is something for everybody here now.
And when you say in manga, there's something for everybody. That's from like tiny little cute. Like Hello Kitty girls
from Hello Kitty
alien tentacles raping those Hello Kitty girls.
Two comics about ramen and about making ramen and eating ramen.
Cup noodle, right? Cup noodle.
These are things that, you know, don't go for a 14-year-old boy.
Right,
they go for that different audience. And that's what happens is people get in the door, they read something like a Saga or a Walking Dead, which is their kind of gateway drug into this, where they go, hey, this is actually really good. You know, you can't bring them to the things you read at 12 years old. You have to bring them to the way they are now. So the Love and Rockets and the adult of the Mobius stuff and the Jodorowsky. Okay, well
let's take that into Gachiro.
Which is an Anthony Bourdain written comic.
Anthony Bourdain, Joe Rose, and Langdon Foss. And basically, it was a comic came out in 2012, I believe?
Yes.
All right, so basically what I loved about this comic was the fact, and I actually posted this on our Facebook page, thinking I would have you on earlier, but we finally get to talk about it. The whole premise of the comic is basically the comic opens with this little shop in a shitty part of LA, right? That is supposed to be the legendary sushi joint, and there's this samurai type guy, and it's kind of based on Yojimbo. It's based on Fistful of Dollars. It's based on
Tampopo.
What's the other one? Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis.
Okay,
right. So it's basically about this one guy playing both sides of the coin, right? But the comic basically opens with a bunch of frat boys coming to his place, right, and ordering a California roll, and he beheads them.
So this is your dream. This is food and violence intersecting.
No, and the thing is, and his kind of his adversaries are these characters who are one has like the really trendy vegan green sustainable place, and the other one is kind of like who's the BAM guy?
Emerald.
Yeah, it's kind of Emerald.
All right.
You know, it's kind of corporate and whatever. And it, dude, as much as I think Bourdain is corny, seriously, this is a fantastic comic.
All right, so food and comics has been around for a long time in Japan, coming to America. And I can't remember the upcoming knife thing, but it seemed to pique my interest because it was taking celebrity chefdom to the next level.
Yeah. One of the things about it is the major comic companies, both DC and Marvel, are always looking a way to get the people who have never touched a comic before.
Yeah, and that was Vertigo, actually.
Right,
yeah.
And comics are cinematic in basics. You know, it's the basis of a storyboard. You look at a good storyboard for a film, and it looks like a comic book.
Yeah.
And that being said, Anthony Bourdain is this... pop star in the chef world, the crossover of the worlds actually worked. People came in and bought this comic book. They were very interested in it.
Well, let's talk for a minute. I'm here for the first segment, so I want to kind of pick your brain, because we've had a lot of kind of changes in the comic world recently. Just as I'm coming in, I'm reading my Swamp Thing. I'm getting the old stuff. And there's the new 52.
Right.
And I'm excited in a way, because even if there was a little backlash, for me it was great. Because it was like I was right there at the beginning.
It did exactly what the 52 wanted to was gave you a jumping
in. And the only issue I actually bought my issue at your place the week that the hologram covers came out.
Right.
Because I was like, I want to mark this as a milestone. I'm like, my first hologram cover. I got to go to a
you didn't buy comics in the 90s.
Yeah,
you missed
1993.
But I did get the at JHU, the guy was like, "Oh yeah, the Swamp Thing one's one of the better ones.
Yeah,
you've done well." Like, I got the pat on the back.
Well, I mean, it was written by it matters who writes and draws those comic books. You know?
So they take this and then there's Convergence, which for me is now upping my wallet spend, but my excitement, because it's no longer, when I'm checking the JHU checklist, there's not a week that I don't have something to pick up. I have a reason.
Wow.
So
you can
be kind, but here's the thing that I had to do learning-wise. I bought some of the Multiversity. I went back, I looked at all the Earths, because these were things I hadn't read.
Right.
Some I could get from the library, and I got to pick and choose. I liked the Red Rain and the Batman as a vampire,
right.
Or
the Crisis books.
Red Sun. I bought that one, which presupposes that Superman landed not in Kansas but in Russia, and really phenomenal. And then I really liked Gaslight.
Gaslight.
Yeah, that's the one that Jeff Parker and Doc Shannon drew.
I just read that. Yeah, that
was, and so amazing. I could play around knowing that some of these worlds were going to appear in the 8 issues of Convergence, or 9, I guess, and then they would have 2 offs. But so we can talk about that. We don't want to spoil it for people.
I don't want to spoil it for people, but I'm here's, you were going to lend me the copies, but I went out and bought them anyway, because I was going to end up fucking buying them anyway.
All right.
All right.
Here's my problem with Convergence. All the Crisis, Flashpoint, all the other retcons that were done, they reconceived the world a million times. Like, they did it more than Marvel did,
This is their way to reset all the timelines.
The art is amazing, but the storylines are so esoteric and so vague that I'm just like, you're cheating me. Because if you go back to the Crisis series, and you go back to like Flashpoint, it was so detailed as to how they retconned it, and I feel that they're and the ad sales executive from DC, who was a client of my last company, I actually walked her into your place. You weren't there that day, but just to, and she was like, "Oh, we're gonna." And I gave her my complaint as a comic fan, and she was like, "No, we're gonna do this." So I'm like, "Do it right," and I don't feel they did.
But here's my question: this is what I'm leading up to. So it's a giant reset. Mm-hmm. But what happened to my Swamp Thing? Because a bunch of things that are coming now. Help me out.
Can I just preface this saying, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Right.
Can I just preface this by saying that if you don't know this sinister corporate ulterior motive behind Convergence, DC was relocating to Burbank. They were moving their offices out of New York. This was a holding pattern. The same way Flashpoint was a holding pattern, where they took their regular teams out of continuity. Yeah. They essentially put in a bunch of second and third stringers.
Uh-huh.
This is not a new opinion. This is the opinion of the ball game.
It's like a Goldie Hawn football movie now.
And the problem is that they had a lot of second and third stringers. I mean, you had good concepts, and I think Kelly Jones even came back to do...
Right, a couple people came
Parker and Shaner, I think, was the class
excellent.
The rest of it, you're talking about, and other than quietly and Morrison on the Multiversity books, which, by the way, are totally fucking inscrutable.
And
that's like reading Sanskrit. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Oh, they're amazing. They're amazing.
They're amazing.
Blow my mind.
But other than that, I don't really know how to take convergence as a thing, because I feel like this is they were throwing the ball up like jacks. You're throwing the ball up in the air. They're sweeping the pieces off the game board.
Yeah, but it's
when they get to Burbank, I'm going to wonder, well, what the hell's the next movie?
Well, they're teasing what's coming.
They're teasing the next movies, because that's what's going on with Secret Wars.
Yeah, no.
Tell,
yes,
Nick,
and
no.
Nick, tell us what's going on.
Here it is. Conceptually, they've thrown the jacks in the air. But like the New 52, the New 52 got the worst rap, because everyone, oh God, they're rebooting everything.
Did you not read Black Hawk?
Awful. I mean,
got a pretty bad rap.
Stop. It was exactly as I predicted. A third of it would be very good, and a third of it was good. We had
that's
Animal
fair.
Man.
That's
we
fair.
We had Swamp Thing. We had Batman. We had Batman and Robin. It's Aquaman. They're
okay,
all really excellent
they
titles.
They ruined Constantine. They did.
Yes.
They did.
They tried to bring him back into the mainstream. Well, at one point, the biggest problem they ever did when they started with Vertigo, and I'm going off on a little of a tangent here, but Vertigo being extracted from the DC universe was the biggest mistake they ever made. Hellblazer was a character that had already met with the other magicians in DC universe. He was around. They separated him with Vertigo, and they wouldn't let them cross over again. Now they got this thing of, oh, let's bring him back and cross it over. And they did it in a way that scared away the people who loved Hellblazer for being this shock and horror comic. You know, Alan Moore proved you can do a Swamp Thing in continuity with Hellblazer, where he created it, and have it still be in continuity.
Karen Berger had made it into such a brand that it was spoiled by that point.
Right.
You almost
I
couldn't
agree.
Have, you couldn't get
I,
turn
you
it
couldn't
back.
Get back. Now back to the actual convergence thing. Convergence, the end result is good. The end result means we can enjoy any part of DC that we truly love.
As we used to love.
Or it's all there. Okay. Listen, Batman and New 52, nothing changed in Batman New 52.
Okay.
There was kind of a half, hey, when did Tim Drake become Robin?
Yeah. Okay,
how long was he Robin? You know, there were little things. But, you know, this will re-streamline it again. The hope is that the new editorial and the new books are going to be strong. I 100% agree. This was what was called a fifth week event. DC used to do events where, you know, comics come out monthly. Well, when there's a fifth week in the month, you've got to fill that void.
Yeah.
Convergence was filling that void. Mm. I feel like they somewhat squandered a really great opportunity with a lot of excitement on all this stuff to put together a mind-blower like stuff like Crisis on Infinite Earths was, or Infinite Crisis that stood up as these classics. Mm-hmm. What they did is they cleaned up shop a little bit.
Okay.
And it was a fun little read.
But we don't know. I may have to choose, if I want to keep reading DC, I may have to choose newer
comics.
Well,
here's the answer. Okay, and here's the answer, and this is the very straight answer for
please.
You. The things that sell will continue the way unabated.
Right.
And the things that don't,
they're
shaking it up again.
Ah.
And one of the arguments is everyone goes, well, I miss Superman with his trunks on. It's like, well, then you should buy the Superman comics with his trunks on. Or give someone another shot with writing him with his trunks on, and let's see what happens.
Right. Well, that's good, because these are now my comic book gurus.
Right.
I'm going to finish out the first segment, because Eli, who brought his comic book collection, I'll end on asking how many variant covers could there be of the action figures. I'm holding it up because we only do visual radio here. But I think these are the most amazing, because I grew up with the Star Wars toys.
Yeah,
so
toys.
I'm holding up Princess Leia 1, which is, you know, Carrie Fisher's live face looking at her action doll. And that's what gets me, you know, to 8 a.m. Wednesday morning
to
the comic book
store. You have till at least number 6 right now.
All right,
According to the solicitations that we filled in, there will be an action figure variant for number 6.
All right, so for Eating Disorder, we're going to take a short break. The Rev will be back with more talk.
And we're going to talk about food and comics.
Food, comics, movies. It's been a great episode so far.
Yeah.
If I didn't have a 6-year-old in tow, then I wouldn't be leaving. But
yeah, listen, comic book man, we got you on our radar, okay?
We'll be right back.
Thank you.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
This is the Reverend Spiro, and this is Eating Disorder. Crazy Legs had to bolt, but we still have Bill Scurry and Nick Purpura.
You got it.
I got it right. You know why? Because I can roll my eyes.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And we're talking about comic books and food and comic culture and food.
Yes.
And I want to dedicate. Well, just I want to talk about the comics and food specifically in the second part of the show. And one of the things I always thought was interesting was a comic called The Flaming Carrot.
Yes.
Which came out.
Bob Burden.
Yeah, Bob Burden. It came out in 79. Right. I remember I was too young
But it started that far back? Wow.
Yeah, started in 79.
He's so good.
Well, I mean, one of the things that people don't know about that comic was he was one of the Mystery Men.
Yes.
From the movie.
Yes,
he didn't make the movie. And I'm thinking, they were going, yes, a guy with a torso level
mask
of a carrot with flaming on his head.
It's an amazing design, though. You know, it's an amazing design.
Yeah, but he was the most ridiculous character ever. It was pre Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
It was pre The Tick. You know, it was pre The Boys. It was one of the first. I'm going to make fun of superhero comics, you know?
Yes. The best part is Bob Burden was funny. Was funny.
No,
it was a drop-dead, you know, killer comic. You know, an Image had put it back out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, they did.
And it was nice to see Bob get some play.
No, I mean, the character had a nuclear-powered pogo stick. He had a gun. And then he had a utility belt that basically did nothing. It had, like, sneezing powder and playing cards.
Right.
You know? And I never really quite understood. When I first read it, I was like, I don't quite get it, because I was still, you know, in the religion of, like, you know, reading Fantastic Four.
It was just it was an irreverent comic, you know, and it was, that was half of the fun. They actually had met the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Far in there, which was one of those, like, mm-hmm. No, these guys, when, you know, the early independent artists found a way to go, hey, you got a hit and I got a hit, let's do something cool together.
You want to hear a good story about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? And it was actually Simon Beasley and Kevin Eastman walk into a bar in East Village. I'm not going to say which bar it is.
Right.
Okay. My friend happened to be an art critic and a friend of both. All right. This is back in, say, around Lobo era.
Okay.
You know, like when Lobo was, like, you know, really big with mm-hmm. Beasley. And this bar was kind of like art friendly.
Right.
So the owner was gone, and Beasley and Eastman, right, drew this great big, you know, kind of TMNT thing,
right,
in like this, their own styles or whatever, signed it on their wall, you know, and did a, like, basically went in there to drink.
Right.
But did this whole thing.
I believe every minute of it.
And my friend, it was this guy named Carlo McCormick, who's a great writer. Bill, nice to see you come back in. Bathroom line was long, wasn't it?
Right, yeah, so, I caught me before.
So Beasley and Eastman do this great big mural in this bar, right, in the East Village. And Carlo was like, oh, the owner's going to love this, blah, blah, blah. The morning the owner comes in, he goes, what is that? And he paints over it. And this is like when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles actual comics were going for bank.
Yeah,
that's like the Taliban blowing up Buddhas.
Yeah.
what are you doing? Why? No.
In regards to, like, you know, food and comics, a couple of characters I want to go over. But one of them is, how do you guys feel about the eggheads? The two eggheads. There's two eggheads. Wow. There's one is the TV show egghead, and one which was Vincent Price. And then there was the Hank Pym egghead.
Well, Vincent Price, I'm much more familiar with the egghead in Marvel. That one I can't say I've ever heard of before.
Yeah, he was kind of lame.
He was a Henry Pym villain, but
yeah, exactly.
Let's talk Vince first.
Well, you know, I think of Vincent Price. Bill Hader's impression keeps creeping in my head. But Vincent Price's egghead to me was like Louis the Lilac. You know, Burl playing Louis the Lilac. And Liberace playing...
Exactly.
Who did Liberace play? You're right.
I can't
remember. He played a villain.
I know, but which one?
It was a second or third tier villain, but the thing is...
He played a gay piano player.
It may have been one of the shows, the ones created for the show. Egghead was created for the show. It wasn't.
King Cat was created in the comic. He did.
What?
He did end up in the comic.
We'll tell that story.
But Vincent Price was a why was Vincent Price not already born in a comic book?
They had to
put him on Bill Dozier's TV show. But that's a fantastic idea. The great, perfect actor for it, the great part for him. Pun based villainy.
Is awesome.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, exactly. Exasperating.
Excruciating.
Excellent.
And what was he? He was about 16 minutes out of doing Corman, and he jumped over to Burbank to do that. That's insane. That's incredible.
Right. And poor Egghead from Ant-Man's Rogues Gallery.
Yeah, ended up as a Defenders villain, which is really lame.
Didn't know what else to do with it. And Egghead was like, Stan was like, well, you call a nerd an egghead, and he'd be mad about it, so he'd become a supervillain. I mean, some of those supervillain concepts from the 40s to the 60s are amazing. Lex Luthor being Lex Luthor, because he
was an egghead, too. I mean, that's the thing. It's like bald, really smart guys.
Right. Egghead was the big, like, insult for that at the time, I guess, and that's why he never took.
Well, back to pun-based villains, there was a villain in Batman the Animated Series called Condiment Man.
Oh, Condiment King.
Condiment King.
Condiment King. Yeah.
Tell me more.
They are wonderful homage. One of the things about the animated series, if there's not everything to love about Batman the Animated Series, is that was their homage to Batman 66. They had a guy named Condiment King who shot condiments at Batman.
They had a mustard gun and a ketchup gun.
And I'll relish this moment, Batman. Like, that's one of his lines.
And who is the voice actor?
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure. I mean, he gets 25, 30 seconds?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, he wasn't a major
It was a Joker episode.
Right. Yeah, and you're in a pickle, and, you know.
Yeah, and then, you know, the old...
Let's see if you cut the mustard.
Right,
you know?
Right. You can't beat it, you know? And, you know, that's one of the things, going actually even back to what Crazy Legs was saying before about Convergence, is that's what I love about the results of Convergence. I want to live in a world where the Condiment King fought Batman.
Right.
You know, if you don't, you can't enjoy comic books that much. I feel like you're not really enjoying them.
Nick, when I was in my early 20s, it was around the time that Hypertime became a thing, right?
Mark Waid.
It was Waid and Morrison before Morrison became persona non grata or DC. I kicked really hard at the idea that we were going to see a return to Crypto the Wonder Dog and Beppo.
Thank you so much. This is my dream in life.
Look at you. Who's a boo?
Yeah. But this is the thing, though, is Beppo. That obviously whatever 22-year-old Bill might have said is different from what 40-year-old Bill would say. Right. And I'm much more circumspect about it now.
Right.
And I could appreciate... I could appreciate a multifaceted, variegated comic book landscape the way I couldn't as a kid. I kicked at it because I thought, this is a return to camp. Right. So soon after we'd thrown away Joel Schumacher, we were reinvesting ourselves in the comic books were going to double down.
Well, I mean, one of the things for sure is all of us being in our early 40s area here is... One of the reasons we all ended up being Marvel guys during that period, because it took till 1985 for Crisis on Infinite Earths for everyone at DC to go, hey, we're not doing this right. These other guys, because when we were all kids, you couldn't give me a Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen or Kurt Swan. Now as an adult, I look at a Kurt Swan page and I go, God, it's glorious and it's beautiful.
Yeah, but I mean, I did appreciate Neil Adams. I did appreciate, you know, like when Arrow and freaking...
Neil Adams, the Green Lantern, Green Arrow, and the Dead Man.
I mean, I was like, there's a Chunky in it. Oh my God. Right. That's awesome. And he's a superhero. Oh my God.
But I think at that point, in that 80s point, is where DC went, hey, we've got to see what the other guys are doing and streamline this to an end to make this work for everybody.
I want to bring it back to one last egg villain, this egg foo.
Oh, yeah.
Egg foo. We have to talk about egg foo. I mean, egg foo is... Okay, this is what I pictured Egg Foo sounding like. He's a Wonder Woman villain, right? Who's a giant fucking egg with a Fu Manchu mustache who... Wonder Woman, you know, like me.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know what's going on. Okay, we make you egg and all. You make the egg, you make their all, you know?
It's an Al D'Amato impression. They got him kicked off.
Seriously, he was every Asian stereotype in egg form.
But they reclaimed him, though, didn't they?
They did reclaim him. Mm-hmm. They brought him back in the new 52.
Which is ridiculous, because he's an egg.
Well, but at the same time, half of the battle here is, back to what I was saying, find a way to make him work. He's this villain. Is he any more ridiculous than MODOK?
He has no powers. Okay,
he's a magic.
MODOK has powers
from the communist era.
He's an egg.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here, listen. One of the things they do with all these companies is they take stuff that was probably from a very un-PC era of making, Asian people, Chinese people looking, you know, with the big fangs and a yellow look to them. And someone in modern times goes, how can we spin this in a modern time? How can we tell a new story with this character?
Yeah, there are no bad characters. There are only mediocre writers. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, a couple other characters. What do you guys feel? Legion of Superheroes. Matter Eater Lad, stupidest power in the universe, yet very destructive. I mean, it's a very violent power. His power is he can eat anything.
Well, he's a Binozon, and apparently from his Earth, his planet, everyone can ingest everything. That's one of the things I love.
So like, how does that planet still exist?
Well, that's one. And two, like, why didn't they take over the universe?
Why aren't they eating each other?
We're just going to eat everything and go.
You're talking about a Levitt's series of rules adhering to reality, which have nothing to do with anything.
See, it's funny. Everyone brings up Matter Eater Lad, which is a character I absolutely love when it comes to eating. But my favorite ends up being from that Legion era is Bouncing Boy.
He's
a fat guy. And in his origin, he's supposed to bring this potion, the scientist potion, to this place, and he F's off, and he sits down, and he orders a soda, and he, by accident, drinks this thing that makes him a fat guy.
Were there Mentos in it?
I don't know. Like, that's what I mean. Why should Matter Eater Lad should be the fat guy?
This is like the Roald Dahl verse, right? How else do you get powers? It's crazy.
All right, the last one I want to talk about is Scott Pilgrim, and it's Todd Ingram, who is the bass player, ex-boyfriend, vegan.
Who was he in the movie? Because I didn't read the comics.
He was the vegan.
Right.
He was Brandon Routh.
Yes, he was the vegan. They kept it pretty close. And I'm a big fan of the Avengers comics and all that, but shit isn't kept close.
Right.
Pilgrim kept a lot of shit close. They really did. And I was really happy about that, except I can't stand...
Michael Cera?
Yes, because Michael Cera goes to restaurants, and we've talked about this here, and plays chess for 2 hours while people are waiting for tables.
Oh,
he's thanks. We've written about it on our Facebook page.
I love Arrested Development so much.
And he was great in This Is Our Youth. I saw This Is Our Youth last year.
Yeah, but
from
the standpoint of being served in restaurants in Manhattan, he'll fuck himself. All right, so I'm not...
This is about food here.
Yeah. But he was the vegan psychic kind of like Super Saiyan,
right?
You know, I mean that was his thing. It was very very Dragon Ball Z with this character,
right?
You know, I like the Scott Pilgrim stuff. I thought this was like a bit of a stretch for them in regards to the whole vegan thing. I mean,
No, go ahead.
Well, here's the thing now. I mean, the biggest move in comic books right now, and Brian Lee was 100% beyond above the curve, because that book was a bestseller, and as each volume
Fantastic
came out.
Book.
Absolutely, and deserved all the accolades it got, was diversity has become a big word in comic books, and it's not so much as making Thor a girl, it's more
what a people. Tremendous segue, man. That is great. I really appreciate how fast you did that.
It's really one of those, you know, these people exist and people want to see themselves exist in a comic book. tons of vegan folks.
Okay,
they're
well,
everywhere.
No, I'm all about that because I love villainizing vegans. We do that on the show all the time.
as a card carrying meat eater, right. A friend of mine used to own Food Swings here in Brooklyn. That was
Melody both. Henry.
Yeah,
Who's not been on our show yet, but will be. Yeah,
and there was the food truck of the year was Cinnamon Snail,
yep.
Which is you know their donuts are to mm-hmm. die for.
Right, like,
and their seitan burgers are worth it. But yeah.
And we're not anti-vegan. We're anti-vegan fascism is what we're into.
Oh, yeah.
That's our thing.
Do your own thing.
We're all right. about eating healthy. We're all about anybody's preference. It's just when you try to force it on me and or...
Come on, Spiro. Vegan fascism sounds like men's rights. Is that not a false
hey,
equivalency?
How do you know somebody's vegan? They'll tell you.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I'll give you. This is where I'll have to agree with Spiro on this one. I love vegan food. It's just all the things I love. But I went to a pig roast last week, and if you don't like it, I'm sorry. Go fuck yourself. It was delicious, and they put it on the spit, and they split it, and we ate pig, and it was absolutely delicious.
Yeah, I mean,
don't, exactly.
I'm not running around saying that what you're doing is wrong.
Right.
You know, don't run around saying what I'm doing is wrong.
Well, just everyone in life, enjoy your thing.
Yeah.
It's the best way to be.
And at that, I think we're going to end. Before we end, though, tell us where we can find you guys. Shameless plug.
I'm on Twitter at William Scurry, and I'm on YouTube. My work is on YouTube at AM Caesar. I'm a filmmaker, and that's where you'll find my stuff.
Cool. Shameless plug.
JXUComicBooks.com, with JXU Comic Books in 32 East 32nd Street and 299B New Dorp Lane.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. Woo-hoo.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.